This is Focus with Emma Griffiths on ABC Radio Brisbane.
Good morning, and starting with a big thank you to you for the great discussion yesterday on Focus about Australia Day. So many calls and texts, and your posts on Facebook keep coming in. You can still chime in on that post at ABC Brisbane on Facebook asking how will you mark Australia Day. If you missed the show and fancy a listen, head to your search engine, punch in Focus ABC Radio, and the Brisbane show will come up with me, Emma Griffiths, and the audio will be there for you to listen to. Today, I was thinking we could have a chat about what seems to be a bit of a perennial, a very troubling one, and that is bullying. Because school's back this week, but at Scots College in Warwick, students start their classes today, but one student is missing, Amy Dolly Everett, who died by suicide earlier this month. Her family blamed Dolly's death partly on bullying. Here's her father, Tick, speaking after the funeral.
We hope to raise awareness around bullying, anxiety, depression, and obviously youth suicide. It won't bring our Dolly back, but it may just prevent the loss of another young life. Just to all the parents, please check your children, talk to them about their relationships, talk to them about their bullying, whichever way it might be happening. Please just talk to your children and anybody else. And remember, speak even if your voice shakes.
Now, you've seen family tragedies raise awareness about family violence, I suppose with Rosie Batty's tragic case as well. So could this be the moment that we get serious about bullying? Anastasia Palaszczuk thinks so. She's asked the Prime Minister to put bullying on the agenda for the next Council of Australian Governments meeting. This is what she told Rebecca and Craig this morning.
I don't want to see any other young person in this state or in Australia think that their life is not worth living due to bullying and harassment. What we are seeing clearly now is that what's happening in the school playground is following children home into their bedrooms. So what we need is we need parents to get more involved. We need parents to sit down with their children and have a very tough conversation. And that is, are you being bullied? Do you know anyone else in the playground that is being bullied, or any of your classmates? Or are you sending inappropriate text messages? Cabinet will be considering some issues next Monday. I've also asked Minister Grace Grace, my education minister, to bring together a range of stakeholders. I also have two MPs that are former school principals. I've asked them to come along as well. I think being principals, they'll have a first-hand experience, former principals, about what goes on in the school environment. But it's a bit like in terms of, you think about domestic and family violence, people didn't really talk about that issue. And now we've opened that onto the national stage. I firmly believe that this is such an important issue. I don't believe a single child in this state should receive a text message to end their life, because we don't know their emotional maturity. How are they going to deal with that issue? How are they going to react? Do they feel like they can't talk to their parents? And this is where we need, you know, people to sit around that kitchen table and parents to sit down with their children and really talk about it.
The Premier on Breakfast this morning. So on Focus for the next hour, a deeper look at bullying. And if at any time you feel that you need to speak to somebody about personal issues this raises, the number for Lifeline is 13 11 14. And for Kids Helpline, it's 1-800-551-800. Questions today. Why, with all of the anti-bullying programs in place, does this still happen? Is bullying part of our DNA? Is it an evolutionary impulse? And most importantly, What would stop it? From you, have you seen something actually work to curb or stop bullying? What was it? The number 1300 222 612 to text, and please include your name. The number to text is 0467 922 612, and on Facebook, the question is up. Your posts are rolling in already. Belle says, you suggest, Belle, hello. Belle, you suggest parents spend more time with their children. Yolanda had to change schools to stop her children being bullied. And Michael, hello, Michael. Michael reckons teaching the kids karate would work. What have you seen work? The number 1300 222 612. Dr. Justin Colson is a parent of six daughters, no less. He also has a PhD in positive psychology and parenting and writes books to help others help their children. Justin, hello.
Morning, Emma.
And Dr. Marilyn Campbell from QUT's Education Faculty, one of the country's foremost experts on bullying. Marilyn, hello to you.
Hello, Emma.
Now, Justin, first, there are messages for parents there, both from Tick Everett and from the Premier. Check your children, talk to them, have a tough conversation. Is that what you think would work?
Oh, look, that's sound advice. We know that one of the most powerful protective factors in a child's life is the quality of the relationship that they have with their parents or other significant adults in their lives. And we know that that can help. I think that one of the challenges that we're facing, though, is bullying is going to exist regardless of the quality of the relationships that we have with our kids. And there are many kids that do have great relationships with their parents, teachers, and other adults that love them, who still encounter awful experiences in the playground or in other contexts. My interest very much in this case is, what do we do about the bullying? And research tells us, in fact, one of the best articles on bullying at the moment, I think, is a 2014 meta-analysis from Jana Juvenen and Sandra Graham, where they identify that most, if not all, bullying programs simply don't work. And while there's evidence that different parts of programs are working here and there from time to time, we still don't have a comprehensive bullying program that works. And I believe that that's for one simple reason. Because all of these bullying programs ultimately turn the people with power into bullies towards the bullies. That is, we administer rewards and punishments. We deliver consequences to bullies that are essentially bullying. How motivated our children are to do the right thing is far less important than how they are actually motivated.
Yeah, well, a text has come in from B. Anti-bullying is a negative approach. I believe we need to focus on the positive. Drop the term
yes.
bullying and promote loving one another. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But it's a bit hard to do, really, isn't it, if your child is the one that's being bullied over their device or you know, the old-style bullying of, you know, having a punch-up at lunchtime.
Let me give a couple of examples of what we can do here. Research indicates that if we can turn our organisations, our schools, our families into what Professor Kim Cameron calls positive or virtuous organisations, we can absolutely change cultures. You see, we can come up with all these strategies, and that's what these bullying programs are. They're strategies. But it's an old business axiom: culture eats strategy for breakfast. And it doesn't matter how good your strategy is, if your culture is toxic, the strategy will not succeed. So Kim Cameron and others who have done work with him have found that when we embrace the positive, which doesn't mean we bury our head in the sand, by the way, and pretend that the negative isn't there, but when we promote virtue, when we teach kids what empathy is, when we help them to understand compassion and kindness, when we teach them social and emotional intelligence, what we see is a significant decrease in things like bullying. In other contexts, we see physiological arousal decrease, experience of pain decreases. Children with ADHD have decreased symptoms. Why? Because they're in an environment that is positive, that is caring, that is compassionate. The challenge is getting the kids who are doing the bullying to learn how to have empathy and to learn how to be compassionate, which goes back to the thing that I said just a few moments ago. It doesn't matter that they're motivated or how motivated, let me say that again, it doesn't matter how motivated they are to do the right thing, because we can motivate them with carrots and sticks. it's far more important how they're motivated than that they're motivated.
Justin, I want to hear from Marilyn Campbell now from QUT. Marilyn, what do you think of this notion that rewarding and punishing the perpetrator of the bullying is in itself bullying?
I actually have a different viewpoint there. I think that rewards and punishments are mainly punishments and negative consequences when we find a child who's a perpetrator. They often have learnt this from families where perhaps there is domestic violence, and therefore their relationships in that way are set by that. I think that for some children, that some kind of sanction is appropriate, especially those who start bullying at the beginning of high schools. So when the primary school is disrupted, we know that the social environment is disrupted and bullying increases at the beginning of high school. If they have not been perpetrators of bullying beforehand, but have decided to join in with their peers, and they are actually sanctioned about that, and their parents are horrified that they would do something, those are some of the kids that sanctions and punishments will work on. However, that's not for all kids, because all kids' motivations to bully are different.
Mm. Justin, would you sanction any sanctions?
Yeah, I want to be sure that I'm not misunderstood here. I think that the way that we come to the quote-unquote sanction is really important. So if I sit down with a child who's been found guilty of bullying, I'm going to do three things, and I call it the three E's of effective discipline. Now, this is all based in sound psychological theory. I haven't invented it, although I have relabeled it to make it a bit easier for the, you know, for the everyday person to wrap their head around it. And these three E's sit on a platform of empathy. The first E is explain. This is where we simply have a conversation. We say, this is an expectation and you're falling short of the expectation. We treat people well here. Now, with let's use the grade 7, grade 8 student, early high school, which has just been identified as the time period, they, at that age, usually know what's appropriate and what's not. So it's also good to get them to explain it to us. Why don't you tell me what the expectation is? Why don't you explain that to me? Explain essentially establishes the ground rules. The second E is explore. This is where we say, okay, so help me to see the world through your eyes. What's going on in your life? What's going on in your world? Because sometimes they do come from terribly troubled backgrounds. Sometimes the bullies will come from elite backgrounds and they just want to be popular. Maybe they're feeling insecure. Whatever it might be, they may have some basic psychological needs that are not being met, which is driving this bullying behavior, whatever it is. And again, I'm not making excuses here. I'm just giving some examples. But we want to explore so that we can fully understand the nature of the motivation to bully. So at this point, we've explained the expectation. We've explored the problem behavior and what's going on in that child's life. The third part is, I guess, where the sanction may come in. This is where we empower the student. So rather than me as the school principal, as the parent, saying, well, because you've done that, you're losing your iPod for a week, your iPad for a week, what we do is we say, let's empower you. What do you think is the appropriate thing that should happen from here? How do we solve this so that it doesn't happen again? And then we work with them rather than doing things to them. Because when we're doing things to them, essentially we're starting to get caught up in that whole power play that we're accusing them of being in. So we don't do things to them. We work with them to help them to establish an appropriate pathway forward. In some cases, that appropriate pathway may include some kind of negative consequence. It should absolutely include an exploration of how they can have empathy for the other person and make restitution. And it should absolutely include a determination to make sure that this kind of behaviour does not continue.
Mm. Justin Colson, I know we've only got you for another 10 minutes or so for the show today, so I want to bring in some callers. Michael in Sunnybank, hello, what's your view on this?
It's interesting because there's a lot of talk about, I think, a lot of bullying, you know, obviously stems from their own personal inadequacies and family background. And I'm an ex-school teacher, and I can say with fairly great accuracy that a lot of bullying is actually supported, well, if not supported, modelled at home. and the perpetrators are often, their actions are actually supported by mum or dad, in that when it's tried to be addressed, mum or dad will say, well, that's not him, or he's just reacting, or she's just reacting, you know, she's unfairly, and turn it around and make out that the bully is actually the victim. And this, of course, is cyclical in nature, and actually the bully never needs to account for his or her behaviour, and thus continues on that pathway, because they're never called to really change their behaviour in any way, because they've got that ongoing support from home.
Mm. Justin, what do you think of that?
I hear it all the time. I've seen it from time to time. It's so disappointing. Sometimes, if we try to step into another person's shoes, we can actually see where they're coming from, rightly or wrongly. And I think this is the power of empathy. But what actually goes on here is we get into this vicious circle. What I mean by that is it becomes a he said, she said. And so the student who's been bullied complains, lashes out, cries, has their experience. And then the person who has been bullied the person who's been doing the bullying gets in trouble, and then they accuse the victim of having done something. And so we get into this thing where we go round and round and round and round, and it's very easy to, I do see parents, hear from parents, hear from school teachers, hear from other families who will consistently say, you know what, our child was bullied, and the parents actually supported their child rather than just owning up to the fact that their child is a piece of dirt.
Hmm.
Their child has absolutely done the wrong thing. There's a really...
How can we say piece of dirt about a child, though, Justin Coulson?
I'm being glib, and I probably spoke a little bit out of turn when I said that, but their behaviour is absolutely appalling. I guess, because of the work that I do, and I'm sure many people who are going to call and other people's experiences with bullying, it can be an emotive topic, and I shouldn't have said what I said. I take that back. But their behaviour is completely inappropriate, and causes such significant harm. And so parents will often, they'll let their child off. There won't be any accountability. There won't be any explaining. There'll be no exploration, and there'll be no empowering to come up with an appropriate outcome.
Mm. And it can require empathy on all sides, can't it? So it's interesting to think where the onus would lie. Mary has had a first-hand experience and is well aware of how complex the issue is. Mary, what situation did your son find himself in?
So the situation we got ourselves into was, we had a son at a private school. You know, things are going really well. His grades started to drop, but we're just like, okay. So then the school doesn't want to admit to bullying. So the school doesn't want to let anybody know, because once they do that, then they're accountable. So if something happens and something goes wrong, well, then they're liable. So what, and this is where it all becomes complicated, because eventually my kid ended up on a gurney in an emergency, bleeding from the ears.
What?
And we had to take him from the school, it's like a grade seven, take him, I never took him back to the school, he's now at another school. But the school can't afford to admit that they let that happen. And I'm not saying that school, I'm just saying generally. The school can say, we've got strategies in place. Schools can say, we have strategies in place. We've got, you know, but underlying, and the gentleman said that, strategy will eat culture for breakfast. Sorry, culture will eat strategy for breakfast. If the culture at the school is it's okay to bully, then that is the underlying problem, number one. But number two is, what happens is it's only when an extreme thing happens. So God forbid, you know, the kid, you know, the little kid in the Northern Territory who commits suicide, then somebody does something about it. And the reason it gets to the point where kids end up on gurneys in emergencies and kids end up, you know, taking their lives or threatening to take their lives is because the system doesn't work.
What had happened to your son there, Mary?
Well, he got held and beaten and spear tackled into a concrete pole, and you know, the school said, the school just denied everything. Just after, I mean, there's kids, there's people still drop in at our house and say, is that your kid that happened to? So, I mean, it's just, it's, but they can't afford to admit to it, because you can imagine the legal ramifications if they admit, yes, we didn't supervise those kids, we weren't watching that. So, I mean, this had happened over a few years. We didn't keep an eye on that. We didn't, our bullying system doesn't work, we were counselling the wrong kids. They can't afford to do that. So, unfortunately, I believe that we need to get back to a thing where we teach manners and we teach people how to treat each other. Not to do with, okay, don't bully. We actually got to teach people, get back to the basics of courtesy and manners, and you know, yes, if there's an older person on a bus or somebody who looks like they might need a seat, let me give them a seat. But we've got into this whole world of, if we look at somebody and they look like they're a bit different or a bit weak or a bit whatever, let's attack them. So we're like magpies, not shepherds.
Well, Peter in Gatton is kind of mirroring that as well, and I'm only laughing because it feels so right. When Peter says, when the politicians stop bullying each other, we may have hope in stopping bullying. Their behaviour is constantly on display. They're leaders and should set an example. But Mary, back on your particular story, and then I'll just quickly get Justin's response to that. But what was the school's approach when you first said to them, my son is being bullied?
Oh, well, a few years ago, so this only happened the end of last year, but a few years ago, like we knew, they'd say, oh, you'll notice that we get a message saying when your son comes home from work and he's got school, he's got choke marks around his neck, it's because of this, but we have dealt with the kid in mind and rah, rah, rah. So then eventually my child, then after this going on, then we got into a situation where they were counselling Dan. So they were giving Dan counselling and giving him coping strategies and things.
But terrific.
Nothing was happening to the perps. So this gang of, you know, perps were just out there thinking, oh, we're winning, because, you know, that kid and there were other kids as well that they were, you know, picking on has got literally almost got a punishment, because he has to go and spend his time being counselled about not being able to deal with the fact that their behaviour was inappropriate.
And Mary, was this a state school in southeast Brisbane?
No, private school.
A private school. Okay, well, Mary, I hope your son's okay now at the new school.
He's a cool kid and we're a cool family, and we believe that you've got to be able to look after yourself, and I don't think that means you have to physically combat, but you have to be able to look after yourself. And I think that we need to get back to the whole concept of, you know, speak when you're spoken to, and like old-fashioned, you know, rules of engagement of how you treat people, and we've lost that, and people just think, okay, well, I have no respect for anybody else, I can just do whatever I want, and if that means I can, you know, beat up that kid, I will.
Mm. Mary, really appreciate your time today. Justin Colson got you for a couple of minutes there. So briefly, what do you think, particularly about that point where it ended up being the person who was being bullied that had to have the counselling at the school?
Yeah, first off, what a heartbreaking story. Unfortunately, I have a file drawer full of stories just like that. I think this shows just how clearly the anti-bullying programs are failing us. And this power-centric approach doesn't work. E.B. White, the author of Charlotte's Web and Stuart Little, said we grow tyrannical fighting tyranny. And unfortunately what happens is we just use more and more power to stamp it out. Or in the case of that awful example just now, some people just shrug their shoulders, say it's too hard. There are too many stakeholders with too much power involved in this, and we just can't do it. You know, we can't negotiate with the parents. We can't work it out with the students. These stories happen far too often and create far too much pain.
Mm. Justin Colson, really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Pleasure, Emma. Thanks.
Dr. Justin Colson has a PhD in positive psychology and parenting, and has written numerous books to help your children through various situations. The latest one has just been released. Dr. Marilyn Campbell from QUT is here to continue the chat about bullying, and lots of your calls coming in. The post is up on Facebook if you want to share your views that way. And if any of this discussion is affecting you and you need to speak to somebody, Lifeline 13 11 14, Kids Helpline 1-800-551-800. Your calls in a moment.
Focus with Emma Griffiths on ABC Radio Brisbane.
And Shelley Lloyd is here with your 10:30 headlines. Hello.
Morning, Em. Morning, everybody. Queensland police have defended the time it took to find a five-year-old girl who was reported missing yesterday and finally found hours later in a bus at a depot. A bus company employee found Alyssa Jade New at 7:30 last night. She was reported missing yesterday afternoon when she didn't return home from her first day back at Jimboomba State School. Detective Inspector Mark White says police had been told that the child hadn't got on the bus. The US House has voted to end a government shutdown after the Senate approved a temporary funding measure. The measure funds the government until the 8th of February and now requires a presidential signature to become official. Emergency crews are on the scene of a collision between a truck and a car on the Captain Cook Highway north of Cairns. Police received a call just after 9:30 this morning. Southbound lanes of the highway are closed. It's been a positive start to trade on the Aussie share market with the big banks leading the gains. Insurer QBE isn't faring so well. Stocks are down more than 5%. The ASX 200 is 0.4% higher at 6,015. The All Ords is up 22 to 6,128. The Aussies buying around 80.1 US. And Liverpool has lost 1-0 to bottom place Swansea in English Soccer's Premier League. We're going to have all those stories and more coming up in the news at 11.
Love your work, Shelley. Thank you very much. About another half hour left for our discussion on Focus today, an in-depth look at the issue of bullying. And it comes just a couple of weeks after there were all sorts of news headlines around the death by suicide of 14-year-old Amy Dolly Everett. And her parents want to raise awareness about bullying, along with anxiety and depression and mental health. Bullying is what we're discussing today. What have you seen that has actually worked to curb bullying or even stop it? The number is 1300 222 612. To text, it's 0467 922 612. The question's up on Facebook. ABC Brisbane is the page. You can like it if you haven't already and leave your comment there. You're with Emma Griffiths, but you are the star of this show. So more of your calls coming up in the next half hour or so. Dr. Marilyn Campbell is from QUT's Education Faculty. And Marilyn, you've written a paper recently about cyberbullying and looking at the history of it, the fact that it was really only first mentioned, a couple of decades ago, 1995. I read that paper and something really stood out was that one reason given by the perpetrators of it to cyberbullying is that it's fun and it relieves boredom for them.
That's what the students actually told us, yes. You wouldn't think that hurting somebody else would be fun for anybody, but that's what they said.
Mm. What other reasons did they give?
Mainly it's about social power. Sometimes it's about getting physical resources. So sometimes kids get their pocket money, their lunch money taken if they're at school, or sometimes they might want their food. But mainly it's for social dominance. So that's one of the real difficulties in when Justin was talking before about looking at what you do with perpetrators of bullying, because their motives are all different. And we kind of think one size fits all, but that's not true. And one of the difficulties that schools have is that they often can't identify the person who is doing the perpetrating.
Marilyn, your paper also touches on one of the theories around bullying in general, which is that it's evolutionary, that we're primates, we're hardwired to bully, to jockey for position, for the best mate or friend, for the best food, for the best spot in the lunch eating area. You know, I mean, chimpanzees can be pretty mean to each other if you watch any of the David Attenborough documentaries. So do you think that's, you know, part of finding a solution to this is acknowledging that it is deep in our brains and our DNA to actually jockey for position?
It's certainly one theory there's two theories going. So the first is called social learning theory. So if you're brought up with parents who are workplace bullies, then that's the way that you will think that it's a good relationship to conduct it in that way. Or if you're brought up with domestic violence, then that's how you think relationships should be. So that social learning theory says that we learn from our society. On the other hand, evolutionary theory says if it's adaptive behaviour for us, then this will be passed down in our genes. And there are some reasons that we could look at that it is actually evolutionary. So first of all, we know that it's incredibly widespread. Every country in the world has people who bully, not just children, but adults as well. It's really a very complex problem and it's really deeply embedded in our society. It also has a history, so it's been a lot in the past. And it's also incredibly hard to eradicate. But there's only been one study that actually looked at twins. And when you look at twins, you can look at that nature versus nurture debate. And there's only been one study, and they found that about 40% was hereditary in those twins about bullying. But that's really difficult because it's hard to separate sometimes aggression and bullying.
Mm. It's the old nature versus nurture debate, isn't it? It's intriguing. Jason on Facebook, hello Jason. Jason said work experience in preschools taught me that parents are the main educators and influence in their children's lives, that they were a large portion of the time not helping and or contributing negatively towards the issue or the resolution of the behaviour. Jessie has said for parents to try to make time to interact with their kids in a more grown-up fashion, do something with them instead of for them. And Julie as well is saying parents need to spend more time with their children, like camping, hiking, fishing, horse riding, relaxing, get away from your own iPhone and just be old-fashioned, talk, talk, talk. So that would all seem to be tying into a social learning, like a nurture kind of theory there. Sam has called in with what's happening in your family. Sam at Cooper's Plains, hello, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, Emma. Am I loud and clear?
You are loud and clear.
Well, first of all, our condolences and prayers for Dolly's parents. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes, my case is more on the reverse side of it. My grandson, late teen, he was alleged to be bullying, cyberbullying, as the doctors mentioned. I was notified by the school and the allegations that it happened outside the school hours, not in the school because of maybe a late night. So I set some perimeters for him, excuse me, where I demanded from my grandson that I should have the password to his laptop and his iPhone. And at night before he goes to sleep, I retrieve it or he brings it and then leaves it with me. That way I monitor what he does purely because that matter has been raised. And though I trust him, but of course human nature is something else, so I have to make sure that I set the parameters for him.
How old is your grandson, Sam?
Going on 17.
Mm. And can you give us any more information about what he was alleged to have done or accused of doing?
He had things that unbecoming of a 17-year-old to be sending on SMS. He though said that it was mutual, you know, with the other party. But my responsibility is him, so hence I set those perimeters for him. Jason, whoever had the text you said, you know, it's the parents. So I thought, I believe it's our responsibility as parents and grandparents to set down those rules at home.
Mm. And Sam, what else might be going on in your grandson's life at the moment?
Well, he's a child that came through to the system, through care. Child safety and all those kind of system that he's came through. But he's been with us a little boy. It's recovering. But the question that I do ask is, even when I was listening to Mary with those. When does bully become an assault? When does the school quantify that that is more than bully, it's an assault, and then refer it to their respective authority?
Mm. That was Mary, who called in earlier saying that her son had been found bleeding from the ear.
Yes, when does bullying become a common assault? You know,
a police matter. That's a very good question, Sam, and best of luck with you and for you and for your grandson. Marilyn, what do you think of that? I mean, does it get to the point where it is a police matter?
Sometimes, yes. It's very difficult, though. It really depends on the age of the child, because we can have 2 7-year-olds who are fighting in the playground, and we don't actually call that assault, because we don't try and criminalise children's behaviour. We look on that as a disciplinary matter. And for a lot of bullying, we also look on that as to try and change that behaviour, or what's even better is to prevent that behaviour in the first place. But some things are so serious that they are breaking the law. And as you know, that under 10 years old, children don't actually considered not to have criminal understanding. They know that it's naughty, but they don't know that it's criminal.
And what about, sorry to interrupt, another, I was reading about this in the weeks after Amy Everett, Dolly Everett, died, and Michael Carr-Gregg, another parenting expert who's often quoted by the media, he was saying that, well, brain development of children, it's just not at the point where, for a start, the perpetrators of bullying, and I feel weird calling them perpetrators, but the people doing the bullying, their brains are not developed to the point where they can realise how wrong what they're doing actually is. Do you agree with that?
No. I think that they actually know that they're doing wrong. They know that it's not the right thing to do. What I don't think that they often realise is the consequences that can happen from them doing the wrong thing. All kids are naughty. All kids break boundaries. All kids do things that are so-called wrong, but they know that they're wrong.
Mm. The moral compass gets formed early, perhaps.
I believe so. I don't think that they know, because the law says that under 10, they actually don't understand that it's criminal behaviour, but between 10 and 14, it's up to the court to decide, and over 15, yes, you know that it's a criminal act.
18 minutes to 11 on ABC Radio Brisbane. This is Focus, taking an in-depth look today at bullying. Kerry in Redland Bay has just had a bad experience as well. Kerry, what's your story?
Oh, look, ours is still ongoing, but we were forced to move out of our home by a really obnoxious bullying man who's then continued to do a lot of damage to our property. We've probably got about $300,000 worth of damage, but it just kept going on. And as well as being traumatised by the actual harassment, intimidation and aggression in not only our home but our workplace, and in our new, we had to move out about so this 6 months after this person.
Right, Kerry. So this is adult-to-adult bullying.
It is adult-to-adult, but I think at the end of the day, if this person, we have been traumatised by him, but the process and dealing with the police and nothing being done. So at the moment, this man, and our case is very extreme. It's so extreme. Even the police say they've not seen this before. But what we've found, and I'm very articulate, I do a lot of public speaking, but I found that we couldn't talk about it to anyone outside the police and our solicitor and my psychologist, because I've been suffering anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress. And if I feel like that as someone in their mid-40s, and I've been to the people that should be able to help me, we've been to the police minister, we've gone all the way down the chain, and basically we haven't been able to be helped. Mm. And I guess at the end of the day, if somebody in my position who is articulate and can tell people what's going on, and we're not either believed or too the system and the laws just do not help. And I don't like to call myself a victim because that's just not the type of person I am. But it seems to be helping the person who's doing these terrible things. And, I mean, this man has two teenage daughters, and we hate to think how they would treat other children at school. So I guess everything your previous callers and have been talking about, you know, it's the parents, it's society, it's culture. I mean, in our position, I mean, it's been over 1,000 days since our nightmare started. It's been about 850 days since I had 10 minutes to pack a port and get out of our house.
Oh, dear, Kerry.
This man was going to kill us. And
this sounds like it's gone beyond bullying, Kerry.
Oh,
I hope you are going to get some resolution and help with this. It's 10:45 and I've just got more calls coming in, but I think we'll be following up with you at another time. 1300 222 612. Talking about bullying today, and yes, Marilyn, if it's hard for adults to get the help that they need, it's not surprising then that schools are struggling with how to deal with this, is it?
Schools are really struggling with how to deal with it. Justin Coulson said something that the anti-bullying programs actually don't work. Evidence base actually shows that they do reduce bullying by 20-30%. But what happens, of course, is that we have an overcrowded curriculum. We have schools being told that their NAPLAN results are incredibly important and that school is there for academic, which is true. But on the other hand, we're also told that schools must deal with the social-emotional welfare of their students, how they're supposed to be able to make sure that they're swim safe, that their driver's safe, that they can do CPR, that they have social-emotional learning.
They have those relationships classes now out of the family violence push, don't they, in Queensland? It is a very crowded curriculum, so how do you fit it all in? Tracy in Spring Hill has 4 kids, and you've got a different take on the way schools are handling this. Tracy, what's happened?
Well, a lot of what Kerry said did resonate with the authorities not really knowing how to react. My second child, when she hit grade 3, got the class list, and I just went, oh, Lordy, this isn't going to end well. Made a meeting with the principal and suggested that it wouldn't work in anybody's favour if she stayed in that class. And it continued, and she was bullied by the teacher to the point of having to have psychological assessment.
What do you mean? Because, what was the teacher doing? Bullied by the teacher?
Oh, she was known to throw bags off the top level of the block. She lost it on more than one occasion, not with just my child, but with others. She had a bit of a history, let's say, right? Anyway, when it came to a head, I got a phone call on a Friday afternoon saying basically the child was unmanageable, and held it together and suggested we have a meeting on the Monday, which we did. Asked for the child to be removed from the class, wasn't. Psychological assessment, and basically the psychologist said she's a really interesting child, but there's no problem here. So this teacher, then I learnt further from family members that she did have lots of issues, but the school essentially, too hard basket, nothing's changing, we don't swap classes. And this went on and on until she finally moved, and that was in the public system.
So the teacher moved?
Well, the teacher ended up moving, and everybody gave a collective cheer because she was that much of a bully. Now, then we switched to later on to the private system. My fourth child's first year teacher at this school is a systematic bully, to the point where a couple of weeks ago she went to a party. And I asked the parent at the party, well, who's the young child got this year? And she mentioned the name. And this teacher bullied my daughter out in the playground in front of her peers.
What do you mean? Like, could you give us a concrete example of exactly what she was doing?
Oh, okay. Like in front of the peers when they're sitting eating their lunch. Oh, what are you sitting with this child for? She's not a very good friend to have. Just basically bullying, verbal bullying. Anyway, there was lots and lots of cases. That was just one of them. To the point where this mother or parent the other day said, oh, we've got a meeting with the school because under no circumstances will this younger daughter have the same teacher. Now, this school has known for, 7 years, and we all swapped stories because we were all quite isolated as parents.
And Tracy, can I just ask, is this school in a state school?
No, the second school isn't. But what I'm saying is bureaucracy has a real problem with dealing with bullies, and it is endemic, like your previous caller said. And I ended up having a meeting with the principal and had an undertaking that under no circumstances would any of my children ever have this teacher again. But she's still there and she's still doing the same stuff from what I hear. So these things are very hard to change. I don't have victim children and I'm no kind of victim myself, but it's really frustrating, like your previous caller said, when you're trying to do the right thing and you encounter these situations, whether it's in a school or the workplace or wherever. You know, you're disempowered.
Mm. Marilyn, this is something anecdotally that I've heard a bit, that teachers can be just as bad at this, and that Focus producer Amanda Dell has also heard, around the school traps. Do you hear this?
I do, unfortunately. You see, in any hierarchical system, certain people have more power than others. And some people abuse that power. Just because they're a teacher doesn't actually mean that they won't abuse their power. Now, that's obviously only a very small proportion of it. But in my experience, when I've been asked into schools, often it's the principal who denigrates me and tries to put me down. And if that happens...
In what way?
Well, they say, you know, and who are you and why should you know anything, after they've invited me to the school. And if you find that type of person who is the leader of the school, then that's a very difficult school to be able to work in, because that means that, as Justin said, it's the culture of the school. And if the leader is like that, then the staff can almost have permission to bully one another and therefore the students, because it's not do as I say, it's about doing what I do. So we, as parents, we model, as schools, we model, as teachers, we model. And because it's such a complex, socially embedded problem in our society, it's no wonder that kids are coming to school and doing this. And it's so difficult for schools to be able to deal with it.
Rosemary has called in from Nudgee. Oh no, have I lost you, Rosemary? Where are you? Rosemary had a very similar story, something to add there as well. Let's hear from Maury at Logan Village. Hang on, let's see what I can do here. Maury, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello.
Yeah, how are you?
Good, you've been listening to the discussion.
Oh, I have, yeah. It's sort of getting my collar a bit sort of steamy.
You're a bit angry about it. What's got you so
angry,
fired up?
No, I don't get angry. I used to be angry, but not anymore. I honestly believe that society is kind of protecting the bullies. And, like, everyone gets to know who the victim was, but nobody knows who the bully is. And I honestly think a law should be passed that if you are a bully and this sort of thing happens, you will be publicly named, you know.
So what did you think of Justin Colson a bit earlier then, saying that if we start punishing people who bully, then that in turn becomes bullying?
Well, it's not really. It's an accountability thing, because if people know, from the parents to the teachers to whatever, if people know that they're going to be publicly known if they've caused a problem in society, they're going to think twice about even doing such a thing. The accountability is going to step right back to the parents, to family members.
Maury, this might get your collar even hotter, but I can see Dr. Marilyn Campbell here in the studio shaking her head a little bit at what you're saying. What do you think of the idea of having to out the names of the bullies as well? Because, I mean, we all know Dolly Everett's name now, but we don't know the name of any of the people who might have sent her harmful messages.
That's right. But you have a think about all of the students who have actually sent a nasty message to somebody else, and the person who they were victimised didn't do anything. But the people who did exactly the same thing to Dolly, then are they somehow more accountable than somebody else who did that? I just don't think that that's any kind of an answer. I don't think that the law is an answer. I think that moral compass is the answer.
And how many names would we end up outing? I mean,
well, it would become ridiculous, because we know that there are at least 30% of kids who get bullied every year in Australia. So the amount of bullyings and the names, it would lose any kind of sanctions, any kind of embarrassment virtually straight away.
5 minutes to 11. Rosemary's back though. Hello, Rosemary.
Hello.
Hello. So we were talking earlier about culture in school, and Marilyn was saying that sometimes she goes in there and it's the principal who really, you know, gives her a bit of stick about coming in and advising them on bullying. You've got something to say about this?
Oh, I certainly have. My son had a very bad bullying experience. This boy physically assaulted him. The move was, oh, we'll just put him in a separate class. But that made no difference. My daughter at the same time was also physically assaulted by a child. This child was actually the school captain. And the punishment for the school captain was to lose her badge for 2 weeks, and then she became school captain again. I actually wrote a letter of complaint to the Department of Education, because it was a state school. They sent the letter to the principal, who then called me into his office and abused me. He was yelling at me, and when I sent a letter back to the department to tell them this is what was happening, they said nothing. They said absolutely nothing.
What did he yell at you?
Pardon?
What did he yell at you?
He was yelling at me that it was inappropriate that I went to the state, went to the health education department to actually say what was happening. It just blows my mind that they didn't even bother asking me, checking with me. There are so many parents at that particular school who have pulled their children out. You know, he actually, you know, he's blown parents up, like, in the middle of the playground. And even though they complained to the department, they've done nothing, absolutely nothing. We were fortunate. We got my son into a private school up the road, who have been amazing, who have stood up for my son, and who have taught him, and now he's a grade 12 now, and, you know, he's doing really, really well.
Well, thank goodness for that. Yeah,
Thank goodness for that.
Rosemary, holy dooly. Marilyn, we've just got a couple of minutes left on the show. So far I'm feeling like, oh, we should just keep going. But, the principal there was yelling at parents. You've heard that before?
I have. I've had it. I've experienced it. You see, what we think of as people who do bullying behaviour, if you don't like the word perpetrators, is that we think of them, we have this image of a not very bright, cowardly, thug-type person. But a lot of people bully others that you wouldn't think, either because of their position. A lot of very popular, social, good parents and teachers think of good kids bully under the radar. It's not a simple problem, and we can't just have one simple answer to be able to say, well, if we did this, and going back in society saying, yes, we should have manners, that's lovely, but it's probably not going to happen. And there's nothing that one person or even a group of people can actually do. We have to know that this is what society we have.
Gosh, and we've all got to work to improve it. Dr. Marilyn Campbell, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and knowledge on this today.
My pleasure.
Marilyn's at QUT. I just want to finish with a quote from my child's grade 2 teacher, who's got this up on the window. Sprinkle kindness like confetti. I think that's a good way to leave this, and hopefully it can make the situation a bit better too. Thanks so much for your time today. I'm Emma Griffiths. This has been Focus. The conversation continues on Facebook. The post is still up. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 with a new discussion.